Accession number 9875, reel 20.
Mr. Ashurst, reel 20. I want now to look at, after you left this rest camp in the village, you're not quite sure where, and went off up into the Ypres sector again.
Yes.
What was your reaction when you found you were going back to Ypres?
Oh, of course, the usual thing. I was going to that hell of a hole again. You know, that's really what we thought. Anyway, orders were orders, and off we went. And we found it as usual. Nothing, only slits of trenches that you slip and slide in and climb out of the best way you can.
How did the battle...
It was rather quiet, though, as regards to battle, shooting. It was rather quiet as regards anything flying about, until one evening Jerry was on a ridge in front of us, you see, just on a ridge, and I could sort of see the movement of these soldiers, Jerry's on top of this ridge, skipping across the opening like that, you see. And I was watching these fellows move across this opening, and what's coming off, what's all the commotion up there? So I started to shoot, and I might have got one or two, because soon after that Jerry started to shell us. Well, we hadn't been bothered up to that. Anyhow, he started to send some nasty stuff over. And it was down to the bottom of the trench. Anyway, one shell, I'm sure it was coming straight for us, and so it was. I said, look out. And I dropped to the bottom of the trench, as far as I could get down. And the other fella next to me on the right, he dropped on top of me to get as far down as he could. And this shell dropped, and the next thing I knew was earth and soil coming over the top of me, burying me, you know. And I find out I am buried, and I can't get loose. And I'm hurting my back, really. Well, I did hurt my back, of course, eventually, through it. And I was able, though, to shout, help. It was just because of the rim of my tin hat. It had stopped the soil from just filling my face up, if you see what I mean. And I was able, with that bit of breath in there, to shout for help as hard as I could, you know. And while I was there, of course, under there, shouting for help, I went unconscious, because I always remember it so well. Everybody in my family came and had a look at me in that trench. I remember it quite well. Every one, every brother and sister, and I had five or six of them, you know, came to have a look at me. Just a look, just as if they were sitting there or standing there staring at me, you know, and then gone, and then the next one. And I must have gone unconscious then. Anyhow.
Did you panic at all?
Oh, yes, really. I thought I was done for until I went unconscious. But anyhow, it wasn't for long. It seems that the officer and some of the men had heard me shouting, and what they did was stick a rifle down the dirt to see if they could get me some air, you know. They stuck the rifle right down and it came beside my face here. Scratched it a bit. Anyway, I came to and they started to dig and shift the soil away from me. And they got me head all bare, you know. So as I was laid there, looking up to the sky, and the place was full of gun smoke and one thing and another, but it did taste nice to me, that fresh air. And then I noticed there was a khaki leg against me, somewhere near my face across here, and it was the fellow that had dived on top of me. It was his leg, I believe. You know, he was dead. He really saved my life, because if he hadn't have been dead, I would have been. You see, I'd have got the full shock. Anyway, they dug me out eventually, and I found out my back was terrible, because I'd been doing straining myself so much to get out, to loosen myself, trying to lift, you know, and I couldn't. So I hurt my back very nasty. Anyway, I crawled out. Then when it was dark at night, they thought they'd get me down to a dressing station. Well, they lifted me out and got me going a little bit, you know, and helped me along a little bit, and until they decided to let me carry on crawling down, practically. Anyway, I came to this place and they put me in hospital, dressing station, sent me to an hospital, and I was there for 2 weeks doing nothing really, only eat, you know, and actually doing nothing or taking anything. The doctor said, like, I should be all right in a while.
Did you suffer any mental or effects from this ordeal, or did you have any traces of shell shock after it?
Oh, no, I was quite sensible. No, I was quite all right. And, like I say, one day there's this rumpus outside, and I had a look, and I can see there's a lot of commotion coming off on the road, and I can see our people dashing about with machine guns, guards, and they're lining the chinks up, bringing them back to camp, you know.
And this was Chinese Labour Battalion,
yes,
nearby.
Yes, they were chinks of some sort. And they were terrible little fellas, you know. They used to dance about with 2 or 3 sandbags on their head. They were that strong, and, you know, they were that sort of people. 2 or 3 sandbags, full, not empty, on their heads, and, you know, gimmicking and making fun and gold. And that fellow stabbed this officer, I believe he shoved his pick in his back when he weren't looking, so they rounded him up, back to camp, covered the entrances with machine guns, and that was the end of that lot. But in 2 weeks' time, I was back again.
What did you think of the Chinese Labour Battalions? I mean, were the Chinese popular with the British troops?
Oh, no. Never had nothing really to do with them. They didn't seem to have any conversation or anything much, you know. They were dirty little devils, really, you know. And they used to cart them out of the morning dead. You know, go around and cart them out dead. Died in the night there, laying there. There was poor samples of humanity, you know what I mean? Very low caste. You sit there scratching yourselves when you went past, you know, like that. Oh, made you sick. to see him. Anyway, we got over that.
Did you know what happened to the one who stuck his pick in the officer's back?
No, no. I have a good idea, of course, but I don't know.
What was your idea of what would happen?
Oh, I'd be taken out and shot. Oh, yes. He'd be taken a few yards away and shot somewhere. And, that was searching, that. Anyway, we got relieved. We came out of there.
You went back to your unit then?
Yes, I went back to the unit. And we hadn't been there very long when we came out. And we had a rest somewhere behind, you know, the line. And moved off. Quite another tidy march, you know. We arrived at Passchendaele. Well, Passchendaele. Talk about a battlefield. There never was and never has been and never will be another earth like Passchendaele. Another few miles of earth like Passchendaele. I can't see it. It was one mass of shiny dirt and water, you know, sluts as we call it, you know. One mass for miles. And bits of duckboards on, broken aeroplanes, rifles, wagons. Oh, dear me, what a place. And the reserves, there were trenches, like, covered over with the what's the name?
Corrugated iron.
Yeah, corrugated iron and dirt on top of that. And we went in there, the reserves, first of all. We didn't go in the front line. Anyway, I don't know which was worse, but anyway, we're in the reserves, and it came the orders. Up the line every night, carrying stuff, ammunition, rations, barbed wire, stakes. Oh, dear me. Bombs. It was painful. Anyhow.
Was it difficult to get across this battlefield carrying
shocking.
Stuff like that?
Shocking. You couldn't really walk. Even the dope boards themselves were terribly slippy, you know. Through the mud that was on them. But you couldn't possibly walk on the hard ground. It was 6 inches deep in mud. Yes, and you was going through it. And you never knew, really, when you were treading in a shell hole, in the edge of a shell hole and slipping in. You never knew.
Was there an actual risk of drowning in these shell holes?
Oh, yes, there was. Because they were deep. They must have been 16 or 17 feet deep, some of them. Yes. And if you fell in, you see, you couldn't get out. You couldn't crawl out, you know. The wet sides. No, you had to be lifted out.
Did you see that happen to people?
Oh, yes, several times. But they weren't altogether right in, you know what I mean? They'd be up to their waist in the hole and they'd give them a lift out. But that was nothing. You were slipping in little holes as well as big ones, you see, and just getting up to your knees in water or something like that.
So it was more a risk to the unaccompanied than to the, if you had someone with you to give you a hand out, you were all right. It was if you were on your own that the real risk was.
It was nasty, yes, it was on your own. Oh, yes, it was all right to have someone to give you a hand out. But that's how it was. For miles, and the ground was one mass of holes, you know, and water. Duckboards here and there, some splattered away. You had to walk across, you know, the silts and stuff to get to the next cupboard that was all right, the next board that was all right, you see. And,
Was it very tiring, especially
with... Oh, yes, it was. especially carrying full load on your back, especially if you're on a working party, carrying a load of box of ammunition for the 120 rounds in, you know, or something like that. It was heavy, you know. You used to bite your shoulders, biting your shoulders, the boxes. And I got this order because I was a sergeant and there weren't many. Anyway, I got this order to go up this night with a party. 25 men I had under me. So we were carting some stuff up, you know. And I set off. We did very nicely for so far, and we were taking it practically to the front line when he opened out just as we got short of his front line, say perhaps a couple of 100 yards, 200 or 300 yards. He must have seen us or something. He opened out with a few shells, you know, whiz bangs, and then zzz, they come like that, and a machine gun playing about. So, well, it was a surprise to us. It come all of a sudden, and we didn't expect it. Things were going nasty up to then, and I heard a shout or two. Anyway, there's 5 of them wounded and 2 dead out of me 25. So we dumped the stuff there and came back. Dumped it there where we were. Let them fetch it if they wanted it. Anyway, I got back, and the officers, they were in little dugouts too, you know, a little corrugated roofs, for 2. There was a little dugout, the corrugated roof, filled with dirt, and 2 duck boards in, where they laid down, you see, for 2 men. So, when I got back, oh, I was jiggered and mad. I went to the officer to report. You've got to report when you come back, you know. So I went to report to him, and I bobbed into this little dugout. And he said, "You've had a very rough time, I believe you are, sergeant." I said, "Yes, I have. Yes, I have. I've 5 wounded and 2 dead. Left the 2 dead behind." "Oh, yeah, I've had it rough. But I'm very sorry, sergeant, but you'll have to go with another party." "I'll have to go with another party." "Yes, you know how short we are as sergeants and officers." I said, "I don't care how short you are, sir. I'm not going up there again." "Oh yes, you'll have to go." I said, "Well, I'll tell you straight, sir. I'm not going up there again." I said, "And if you think it's cowardice, well, you've got your gun there. Settle it. I might as well die nice and comfortable here as up there in that hole." "All right," he says, "you're not going?" I said, "No, sir, I'm not going again tonight." "All right, I shall report you to the colonel." "Right." And I upped it. Anyway, he must have had second thoughts. He never did report me to the colonel. I never heard no more about it. So that ended that lot.
This and it was just, was it the tiredness that made you shout out like that, or rather complain, or was it just that, did you feel it was unjust, or what was it that provoked you that time?
Oh, I should say it was the punishment we went through doing it. It was horrible, hard work, and your pals getting shot and wounded. You weren't having another dose like that, because we weren't going over the top. You were just carrying stuff up, and I'd made my mind up I weren't going no more, because I was certain I'd get done next time if I went. I was, I felt certain. So I told him, I'm not going. He said, anyway, he reported me to the, he said he'd report me to the colonel. But he must have had second thoughts. He never did.
Did it change the way that officer treated you in the future? Did he?
No, no, not really. Because that's only what I could expect. He could have gone, you know, but he didn't. You see, he could have gone. There was nothing to stop him going. He was an officer. Why couldn't he have taken the next party up? One of them, one of the two of them. Why couldn't one of them have gone? No. They were stopping there nice and comfortable. While those lads was going up. That happened many and many and many a time, you know. Things like that. Where an officer should have done a thing, me left it to his NCO. Because I've done it dozens of times for officers. When they should have done it, I've taken charge. Yes. We're better without them than with them, anyway.
What happened after this, then? I believe you went out on rest.
We went out on rest. And did we go to Parry Flag?
I think that's where you told me you went to then.
We went after that lot, because we were badly cut up, you know. We were a poor sort of a battalion. Not a great strength. And they decided that we should go for a good rest. And I think we went. I think it was 6 weeks of a rest we had at Parry Flag. We marched there and we billeted in tents on the beach at Parry Flag, and we had a damn good time for all that time, a very good time.
Did you have any duties?
No, nothing much, no. No, they didn't kill us with duties. We had a good time. We spent most of our time at sea. Because we were there, it was there beside us. And I remember while we used to be knocking about at water, a fella used to come in an aeroplane and try and make us duck. You know, skin down and make you duck under the water. Must have been the Mad Major, they called him. Anyway.
What, were you allowed into the town?
Oh, yes. Any time we wanted. Having anything, food, drink, anything. We had a good time. And we'd had some money given us too, so we were all right. And
did you have enough money for an extended period like that?
Cause
you
didn't... yes. It lasted us very well. And, of course, at the end of the 6 weeks, during that time, the four platoon sergeants, which you always make together, you know. We make together again. And we had one special pub, a staminet, where we used to go, because we used to go and dine with them as well. Where lads used to go in for a drink, we went in and we dined with them in the back kitchen, you know, as well, us four, because we paid for it, you know.
What was that estaminet like? Can you describe it for us?
Oh, just an ordinary house, you might say, with a bar. Nothing much different. And this old Vin Blanc, of course, and Rouge. And beer, of course, you never drunk any beer. It was kid's stuff, that. Anyway, the last night, we knew we was going away in the morning. We were marching off to the front in the morning. So we ordered a good do at this estaminet, me and these other three, a damn good feed, you know, and paid for it, of course, and booze. And we went there at night, and we boozed, and we ate, and we boozed, until we faded away one at once, you know, drunk, as lords. Anyway, I remember I walked out of the back door. I didn't know where I was going, really. But I walked out of the back door and I fell down the steps. There were two or three steps at the back door and I fell down. I laid there. Oh, I weren't bothered. Pouring. It started to pour in rain, but I still laid there.
Were you unconscious or...?
Well, really, I don't think I was asleep. I must have been unconscious. It was pouring down. It made no difference. I stopped there. And, well, the night's going on, you know. And we'd usually kick off early at morning for Newport. Anyway, the lads missed me, you know. My platoon lads said, "Hey, come on, let's go and get the sergeant. He's going to get damn well missed. He's going to get shot." So they come round to the pub and found me there in the backyard. Picked me up, dragged me back again to the camp, covered me up with blankets, took me clothes to Cookhouse and, you know, dried them up. And, what would it be, 6 a.m, something like that? 7 a.m. We fell in for Newport, a march of 20 miles, comfortable. And, well, there was me, been out like that all night. And anyway, I started to march, and I found out that getting drunk off champagne's nothing too bad. I'd finished up in front of that platoon where I should be, and not only that, the last mile or two, I carried another fella's rifle, what wasn't doing so well, you know, one of my men's rifles, what wasn't doing so well. So that was two rifles on my shoulder, after 20 miles. And I finished up in front where I should do, feeling fine, yes. I've thought ever since then that champagne's the best thing you will get drunk off. No bad head, nothing, you know, in the pink I was. And we dropped into some empty houses.
At Newport?
Yeah, they were partly down and partly up, you know. Anyway, we dropped into them. And we had a rest for a night, or a day. And then the following night, we went up the line. Fairly quiet, nothing much doing. Only now and again an aeroplane coming over with a bomb or two, you know. Nothing exciting. And we crossed the canal. Went across a bog, on duck boards, up a trench, till we come to the front line. And there was a little pillbox or two, Jerry's there, you know, that was on our side. We had them then. Of course, they were fixed the opposite way about, you know.
There were no British-built ones then in that area?
No, no, not. I never saw one all the time I was out there. And we were quite nice and quiet, and we had a day or two there, and we were relieved, and we came out again, us, from there, and somebody relieved us, you know, forget who it was. And we didn't go away. We went back to these houses. And we seen a, oh, went back to these houses, and a bombardment started all at once. A terrific bombardment. So they rushed us out of these houses. And there was a communication trench in the middle of the Newport, in the middle of the street, that you could walk in. And there was all the wires above your head, you know, company wires. And you could walk from one end of the place to the other, almost a canal bridge.
Was it covered over?
Yes, oh yes, covered over. And you could walk upright in it. And I should think it would be as wide as that to there, a couple of yards. You could walk straight down it. The middle of the street it was. And you couldn't see nothing of it on top, you know. Anyway, we walked down that and got towards the other end, like. And now then, up into the front line. Back in the front line, they said. The officer said, quick. Well, there's one bridge we can go over at Newport. One canal bridge. A narrow canal bridge. And he's shelling that every second. And nearly sure, every second he's shelling that, you know. And horses are dashing over with ammunition carts, dashing like mad. Over. And the gang of men are going. Then some more men are going, in like that, in between breaks of shells, you know, salvos. And comes our turn. Well, we wait for a salvo to come. And as soon as it drops, we're off. We've only so long to get clear before the next salvo's coming, you know. We might as well say they're coming as we...